So, by brief review, in chapter 16 of the book of Revelation, when we got to the end of this, we are now literally in the end of the end of the tribulation period. So this is coming down in this seven-year window of time. God is bringing things to its final end. The final curtain is coming down. As I shared with you guys last week, God gave birth to the earth, and he will make sure that he will give it its ending. So in chapter 16, verses 17 through the end of chapter 16, the seventh angel pours out the bowl judgment upon the earth. And in that brings about the end of the end. That's the final bowl judgment, okay? So the events that are described in this section look forward to, and they describe that bowl, in that bowl, if you will, of judgment. What takes place is the fall of Babylon and the return of Jesus Christ to the earth. That's what all are kind of consummated or mixed into that seventh bowl. So what we will be learning in chapter 17, 18, 19 are all included in that seventh bowl. So this is just describing the events as they transpire as it's poured out. Okay, does that make sense so far? Okay, so you remember that from last week. I shared with you probably chapter 17, 18, 19 are some of the more difficult chapters, especially chapter 17 of the entire book of Revelation. So what we began discussing last week was the fall of Satan's religious system, this one world global religious system that he will invent, he will concoct during that particular time. So the beast that we were learning about last week, we saw, and I showed you guys a coin that I have from the EU. And so it shows a woman sitting on a beast. It's very interesting. Why would they choose that for a coin? It's very interesting. But we see that this woman is sitting on the beast, sitting on many waters. And so in order for us to kind of pick up where we left off, we see that they are all together. So the woman is on the beast. She's in control of the beast. Or let me say it to you this way, the beast is giving control or yielding control for this particular moment of time. And you'll see how that unfolds as we continue to move forward. So the woman, we learned, has sold herself to the kings of the earth. She is, we learned that she is a harlot. So in other words, she's been in bed, if you will, with the kings of the earth, the rulers of the earth. The world leaders have been affected by her, so their policy making, their decision making has been affected or infected literally by this woman. And so she had a mystery name written on her forehead. Remember what it said there in chapter 17, verse 5. Mystery Babylon, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And so John tripped out on her. After all the crazy stuff he's seen, he looks at her and he's amazed. So, I mean, how much more amazing things do you need to see than what he's seen? But this image that he is trying to describe to us, it really, really drove him to just stare at her in a complete amazement. So I began a discussion with you guys last week on what or who is this mystery Babylon, this great mother of all harlots. Who is this particular, or what is this particular being, okay? So and as I shared with you, it's very, very important that we get that, because actually 17 and 18 in particular depend upon us grasping hold of understanding who or what she is. So what is it? Well, I jumped into a discussion with you guys last Thursday night where I shared with you Babylon gets its name from the ancient Babel, or the Tower of Babel, where, Nimrod, who originally built that, the meaning of the name, we shall rebel. That's what this particular place means. The tower, remember, was a pagan, temple designed to rise up above all. It was a symbol of what man can do when man governs himself. When man controls, so it was a religious temple controlled by the governing of the people. And so what does that mean? It was a combination of government controlling religion. Government-controlled religion. Very important that you catch this, because it all will make sense next week. I'm giving you advance warning, okay? So it was this effort of the people to create this common religion and then governed by and unionized by the people, so you get this picture, okay? And that, by the way, began, as we talked about, in the Garden of Eden when Satan tempted Eve and said, you don't need God, you can do it yourself. Just take a bite. And you can know the things of God. So, we learned last week that it's the religion of self-effort. And honestly, it is in our roots. It is in our DNA. Unfortunately, it is a part of our sin nature. The religion of self-effort, you know, it has affected us all to some degree or another. And so, tonight I'm going to kind of continue to, you know, move on that particular thought. But the philosophy, if you will, is just try really hard and you can reach God by being a good person. You can reach God by your good human effort. You can be good enough. And all you have to do is try really, really hard. And so I shared with you last week that so inbred is it into our own being that God said, okay, if that's what you think, if that's what you want, I will design an entire religious system for you. I'll make it into a covenant. And in essence, you guys, that's what the old covenant is. You want to try hard? I'll give you the rules. Here, keep these rules. And I shared with you many verses where they said, we will do it. We can do it. Yes, we can. I knew you'd like that, Dan. So, he gives them the old covenant, but he gave them no power with which to perform its demands. And so the problem with the old covenant is they couldn't do it. And neither can we. And that's why we need Jesus. And that's why we got a new covenant, you see? Because we are saved by grace. We are saved by the grace of God. And so, unfortunately, then we as Christians, unfortunately, then seek to please God with our human efforts after we've been saved by faith. And so this is something that we will be wrestling with. So we closed with these questions last week. How in the world does any of this mean anything to the book of Revelation? Okay? How does this tie into this woman? What does it have to do with the end times? And why, after all that John has seen, did the sight of this woman riding on the beast, why did that freak him out so bad? So let's take a look. Let's jump back in and let's get kind of dig away at a little bit more as we find some more clues as to who this woman is in and during the tribulation period. So we pick it up at verse 7. It says, the angel said to me, why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. Are you confused yet? Good. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also, or in addition to, okay, that's a clue word, seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. The beast that was not, that was and is not, is himself also the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going to perdition. Are you confused yet? The ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. Then he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And that was one we read last week. So are you confused? Did any of that make much sense to you? Okay, cool, because I haven't got a clue what any of this means. So let me tell you, let's break this down as my brothers asked me to do, okay? We're given some interesting clues as to who or what this woman is in the tribulation period, okay? Remember that the woman is riding this beast. She's on top. She's in control. She's the one riding the beast. So that means the beast, who is also, we've learned, is the false prophet, the second person of the unholy Trinity in this evil dark time, which will represent and will be the one that is in control of this world religious system. The beast has the control of that particular system. So Satan is in control, if you will, but he gives this power to the beast. So the beast is in control of this religious system that the whole world at that time will be participating in. So the religion is pagan self-effort, as I described it to you last week, which was kind of, it originated in the garden, but really it was propagated at Babel. So it is a form of Christianity. So check this out. A form of Christianity, if you will, but it needs to be, everything needs to be brought together, because as we look even in our current Christian culture, we see Christians are all over the map. You have the Pentecostals, you have, you know, the Lutherans, you have, you know, the Calvary Chapels, you have the Baptists, you have, you know, everything in between. Then we throw in the high church, such as, you know, the Catholic Church and Presbyterian and things of that nature. So right now, we're all over the map. And so in order for this system to be bought into, the beast, the Antichrist, is going to need to have some sort of what we would call an ecumenical movement. So what that means is somehow we got to get everybody to just get along. We got to get everybody to, you know, drop their preconceived, you know, denominational background, and let's all just get along. Maybe we'll even write a new song called We Are the World. Maybe that would work, you know. So during this time, so that would be, don't you agree, that's going to take someone of great skill. Just getting, you know, Calvary Chapels together is almost impossible. So getting, you know, different denominations together, it's going to be very, very interesting. But right now, during this particular time of what we just read, the beast needs religion. So he carries her, the woman, on his shoulder, if you will, as long as it suits his purpose. I'll take her for a ride. I'll let her think she's in control. As long as it keeps the people sort of numb and happy during this particular season of time. So, John tells us that the beast has seven heads. So, he then describes it, and again, remember, he tells us that he's speaking figuratively. So when the Bible tells us that he's speaking in figurative, or if he's kind of using figurative language, then we can look at it that. However, there are some things that he does tell us that are literal. So the Bible is the best commentary on the Bible. Always remember that, okay? So verse 9 and then verse 10, I told you, we see the word also, or we could say in addition to. So we have that tells us then, there's a dual meaning to what those sevens are. So they represent, first, he says, seven hills. So it's no, you know, that could only be one place in the whole world right now. And, you know, the seven heads there in verse, you know, 3 and 7. Seven mountains there in verse 9. I think any of us would know, if you have even a remote idea of, you know, where things are at, it's a city set on seven hills. So what city could that be? There's only one city in the world that's like that, Rome. So let me read this to you, because at the particular time when the Revelation was written, Rome was reigning over Rome, was reigning over the kings of the earth. They were the rule, they were the world-dominating power. I looked this up in the Grolier Encyclopedia. Listen to what it says. Conscious settlements probably began about 1000 BC on Rome's future site, around the fording point of the Tiber and the surrounding hills that, unlike other low-lying areas in the Latin area, were free of malaria. Probably by the 6th century BC, several separate tribal settlements, including those of the Latins and the Sabines, had coalesced to form a single city. This early city was built on seven hills, Capitolina Hill, Palatine Hill, and it describes the different hills that I would butcher trying to tell you all about them. The city eventually became the capital of the Roman Empire. That's just right out of the encyclopedia. So it tells us that it is the city that is built on these seven hills, and each one of them has a name. So then, we also know, though, that it tells us that it has a dual meaning, that it also could represent seven heads. So this would be seen, if you will, as seven kings as well as seven mountains. So he tells us seven mountains as well as the seven leaders or seven kings, okay? So that could be even translated there in verse 10, seven kingdoms. So, in other words, the kingdom of the beast will then be, because it tells us that it has not come yet, the one that is yet to come, would be the kingdom that the beast will rule and reign over, which will be the final seventh kingdom. So then that means that we have six that we need to account for. Are you following me so far? Tracking a little bit? Okay. So in verse 10, it tells us five kingdoms have fallen. So it says the kingdoms that were, the kingdom that is, and the one that will be. So let's think of the ones that have fallen. Those, if you look at your world history book, very simple, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, the Medo-Persian Empire, and the Greeks. Rome was the ruling power that was. So the five are gone, they were. The one that is, which would be Rome, the one that is to come, will be the final world-ruling, dominating, you know, scene, which will be the one that the beast will rule and reign over in the book of Revelation. You with me so far? Okay. So then, if we leave it simply as the seven kings, so let's just take it as the seven kings, okay? So if we were to look at it in that way also, these would be the rulers of the Roman Empire. Now, this is very interesting. Then we would say, okay, five have fallen, one is, and then the beast will be the one that will be ruling in the final, all right? You with me there? So that's very simple. Also, you can look these up in the encyclopedia also. We have the five Roman rulers or Caesars that make more than dressing. So you have Julius Caesar, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, and Nero. Those have all died. The one that was during that particular time, and believe me, all of them died unnatural, crazy deaths. If you look at it with your history. The one that was during the writing of the book of Revelation was Domitian. Remember, we met him when we got into chapter 1. So that would be the one that was in that particular time. Then the beast would be the one of the revived Roman Empire built on the seven hills yet to come. So there we have found and we've discovered a little bit more about who this woman riding this beast is. So then, look at verse 8 again. And we read it out of the New King James. Let me read it to you out of the New Living as you follow along, and you'll see this is that's why it's kind of I think it's a good translation to have as a study help, okay? The beast, this might make it easier for us to understand. The beast you saw was once alive, but isn't now. And yet, he will soon come up out of the bottomless pit and go to eternal destruction. And the people who belong to this world, whose names are not or were not written in the book of life before the world was made, will be amazed at the reappearance of this beast who had died. A reappearance of the beast. That's interesting. All right? Let me throw a wild one at you, okay? If we apply this to the rulers that were, then we could be dealing with one of these Roman rulers that has died that would suddenly be, if you will, kind of come back from the dead or brought back from the dead. Satan might be able to do that. Could be maybe Nero, maybe even Domitian. Both of those two guys were the most evil guys that ever lived. I think I told you guys what Nero would do when he was killing Christians. He would take them, dip them in hot wax, ram them on a stake and light them on fire, ride around in his garden naked and yell out, you know, where is your God now? So the guy was nuts. He was a complete whack job. Domitian made Nero look like a saint. So he was equally as insane. So could, you know, it be the bringing back to life the Roman Empire? Maybe. I believe so. Could it be, even if we were looking at one of these rulers, could it be the bringing back to life one of these crazy whack job Roman rulers? Maybe. Something to ponder. That's a big maybe. So let's talk about the 10 horns then for just a second. Verse 12 tells us that they are 10 more kings in addition to the other 7 that we've already talked about. Okay, so write this down next to that verse there in verse 12. Daniel chapter 2, verse 36 through 45. The 10 kings are parallel with the 10 toes of Daniel chapter 2. When Daniel describes the image, he describes these 10 toes. That can only be the revived Roman Empire, because in John's day, the kings had not received their power. It will be reserved for the last days when there will be a federation, another revived Roman European federation that will be headed by the beast when he comes to power. Because the 10 kings during John's day did not have the power that's described in the book of Revelation. It was one king, Domitian. He was the one single ruler. It didn't talk about having 10 kings having power. So it's obviously speaking of a future time during the book of Revelation when the beast is in, he will give power and authority to 10 kings that will co-rule with him. So even in our day, which is absolutely phenomenal, if you grew up like many of, you know, of us did, that, you know, if you were thinking about end times prophecy back in the 70s, we were thinking, well, we would have to have a European Union, we'd have to have a European Confederation. That's never going to happen. And look at what we have right now. Now, there are not 10 nations in the EU right now. Anybody know how many there are? There's 27 right now. 10 years ago, there was 12. It was closer to 10. But let me tell you, like us talking to our son-in-law, many of the EU nations are talking about dropping out like flies, because especially Germany, they're the ones that economically, they're the ones carrying much of the EU, and they're tired of it. So many of these are going to drop out. So at some point, there will be 10. You can bank on it, because that's what the Bible says. So these 10 kings, then, during that particular time, will willingly give support to the beast in the beast's battle against Jesus Christ. So they will willingly give that to him. And the people that come with him, when we get to chapter 19, you're going to find out who that is. It is you and me, the Christians, that put our faith in Jesus before the rapture takes place. We will be horse people someday, you guys. I'm telling you. All right? And, you know, I'm not so sure that if he won't let iron horses be involved in this, we'll have to wait till we get there, okay? So, we will be riding in with him. And at that particular point, you know, this battle with Jesus, he will then destroy the beast. He will destroy the great harlot, but more on that later. But suffice it to say, when Jesus comes back, no one's going to be able to defeat him. And it's as if we come riding in as his army, but listen, we're not going to do any fighting. He doesn't need us. We're going to watch him take things down just by the power of his sword that comes from his mouth. He will destroy. So we discussed what the waters were. Okay, the waters, I shared this with you last week, on which the harlot is seated on the beast. We are told, again, there in verse 15, that she will have influence over the whole world. It tells us that she is sitting on peoples of the world. So she's going to have this influence over the whole world, politically, economically, and most of all, religiously, during that particular time. And that's what makes this so absolutely amazing when we look at the book of Revelation. That during that particular time, thinking about a one-world religion, and I can tell you guys something. I have, you know, some people said, will it be Islam? I don't think so. I've given you guys many clues and many hints because here's, let me give you, as we are end up at this particular point in time, okay? We're still left with some questions, even if since we've just read this piece. We've been digging around, and so we now know what the 10 heads are, or the 7 heads, 7 kings, the 10 heads. We know what we're starting to get an idea of what's going on. But we're left with a couple of questions. Number one, is there a religion that could become a world religion that we see currently? I believe I will be able to give you a couple of ideas. One of them, even as long as maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I wouldn't have even considered it, wouldn't have even thought of it, but I'll share it with you. Number two, you know, is there, or let me say this as a part of that, is there a rich, influential religion that has been infected with the religion of self-effort? Let me give you some more clues. Let me give you another clue. If that is so, could that then be the final religion that the Antichrist would ecumenically use? One of them that will immediately come to your head, I know what you're thinking. I'm going to throw a wrench into your works next week when I throw another idea at you. Whoops, I just said next week, didn't I? I've got a new idea that has been developing over the past several years. I will share it with you. Secondly, what happens to the woman after the beast is done with her? When the beast says, that's it, I don't need you anymore, what will happen to the harlot, this harlot with the writing on her forehead, when the beast says, I've used you, I've needed you for a season of time, but I don't need you anymore, what will happen to her? So, two questions. Is there a religion, so you guys put your thinking caps on, a world religion, a rich, influential religion that has infected and been infected by, you know, if you will, self-effort. Let me throw one more thing at you. Is there one religion that we could say is even has the blend of state-run, state-controlled? You're tracking with me? Okay. And what happens to the harlot after the beast is done with her? I will tell you next Thursday. All right? So you're stuck with me one more Thursday. You don't want to miss what I want to share with you, because one of them, I will tell you an idea that I have been watching a religion develop over the past, say, 10 years maybe, yeah, or less, a religious system that is self-effort, that is government controlled, that you may not even have ever thought of. And I will share that with you next Thursday night. Okay? Pray with me. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time in your word. And Lord, just what appeared to be difficult at first is now proven to be, well, not too hard if we just look at our history book. So Lord, may you deal with our hearts and help us to be ready for next week. In Jesus' name, amen.